Hey, Roxy.
Hey, James.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know why?
Why?
Because Creepy Kingdom has officially launched a Patreon account.
Patreon? What's Patreon?
Well, let me tell you, Patreon is a way that the listeners of the show can support us.
So, like a Kickstarter?
Not exactly. Kickstarter only is a one-time thing. On Patreon, our listeners can support us every month. And in exchange for them supporting us, we will give them special, super awesome prizes.
How much do they have to pay to support us?
They can pay whatever they want. You could pay $1 a month. You could pay $10, $100. It's up to them.
That's really cool. So how can Creepy Kingdom fans find this Patreon thing?
Well, you could go to creepykingdom.com and check the show notes on our recent episodes, or you could go to patreon.com/creepykingdom. That's patreon.com.
I'm going to go check it out right now.
Me too.
Spellcaster Media presents.
Greetings and welcome to episode 147 of the Creepy Kingdom Podcast. A podcast all about the spookiness of films, theme parks, and beyond. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. In this episode, we welcome back Rick West to the show. If you have not heard his previous episodes or you don't remember, Rick West is the guy that runs the longest-running theme park media. Started off as a print publication, now online, Theme Park Adventure. And in his past episodes, he talked all about his documentation of the building of the Indiana Jones Adventure in Disneyland. If you haven't heard those, definitely go back and listen to those because there's some incredible stories in there. But he's back to talk about his trip to Shanghai Disneyland. And our talk was so long and so epic that we had to break this one up into two parts. So this is part one. So without any further ado, let's begin. All right, I'd like to welcome back to the show, Rick West. Hello.
Dude, hey, how are you doing, James?
Doing super, doing great.
Awesome, man.
And also joining us is Creepy Kingdom frequent contributor, Grant. Hello, Grant.
Yo.
And Grant's on this show to talk to Rick because Rick just got back from Shanghai Disneyland. So we're going to hear about your thoughts on all that. But let's take a few steps back in case someone hasn't heard the previous episodes that you've been on, which, by the way, about a year ago, you told your tales of covering the building of the Indiana Jones Adventure.
Yeah, oh, my God. Has it been a year?
Yeah, it was about a year, yeah.
Oh, my God. All right.
Yep. Very popular episodes. Got a lot of feedback on those. People loved
awesome.
Them.
That's great.
Yeah. I know I listened to that one.
You know Grant did, so someone did.
Awesome. That's really great. Great. I'm glad that it went over well. That's good.
Oh, for sure. So you, and the reason that you were covering it is that you are from Theme Park Adventure, one of the longest running theme park publication? Is it still a publication?
We are the first. You can call, dude. It's gone from magazine to publication to website to now it's bloggers, and now maybe I'm a theme park influencer. Take your pick, man. It's gone through so many different names, right?
Right.
But we were the first. We started in 94 in print before there was an internet. And so I think that makes us like, what, 24, I think, this summer?
That's
so
crazy.
We're nearing the big 2-5.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. If you really sit there and think about it, you're 25. Yes,
it makes me want to drink.
Uh-oh. You are also are one of the people that brings us the fine convention Midsummer Scream.
Yeah, I'm the creative director for Midsummer, and we just had a meeting tonight. We're planning year 3. It's going to be fantastic at the Long Beach Convention Center on July 28th and 29th. Get your tickets now, and we're going to put on a hell of a show for you guys. James, you going to come out?
I think I'll be able to squeeze that into my schedule.
That's what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Anyone that listens to the show, we cover this event extensively. There's so much awesome stuff there. I wish I could clone myself so I could do all the things that are there. Because it's just
you and me both, man. And one of my clones would be in the room sleeping.
Yeah, I bet.
Grant, are you going to come out? Come on out, man. Come on.
I wish I could.
You're going to love it. Come on.
Yeah, from Florida? Man, if you buy my plane ticket, I'll go there.
James is going to fly you first class.
Yeah. Nothing but the best.
Fantastic.
Nothing but the best for Creepy Kingdom contributors.
is this a Patreon bonus exclusive? You know, if you are a Patreon contributor for a certain time,
yeah, that's right.
James will fly you out first class.
Sure,
it's amazing.
Yeah, dude, just contribute $1 a month, and I'll fly you out first class to Midsummer Scream.
That's it, right there.
So, yeah, but you do all that great stuff, but then you. Of course, your day job. Why don't you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's where it gets kind of crazy because of TPA, it led to about 6 years ago me getting a job actually in the themed entertainment industry. So I was invited by friends that worked at Thinkwell at the time to step through the looking glass and become one of the guys that I wrote about for so many years. And so that's been kind of a weird it's kind of a weird dual life for me, running a fan site and then by day being a themed entertainment professional. Professional is such a weird word because like we're just like creative nuts. But I mean, I'm a creative director, show writer. And so I'm the blank page guy, the in the beginning, the great I am, the very, very first thing that people go to, which is great. Some people think it's daunting. I think it's great because like an artist with a blank canvas, I get to paint with words and I get to paint very, very densely with words so that artists then can take and make beautiful, you know, concept art and engineers can start scratching their heads, figuring out how we're going to do these type of things. And it's a very exciting process.
That's awesome. Is there anything that you could mention that exists in the world that you have worked on?
Nope. Check that box next.
Okay.
So, but all joking aside, it's one of those things where if you're a show writer, the stuff that you do is literally in the beginning, and it has so many paces to go through and so many iterations to go through to install and then opening that like 95% or better of the stuff that a show writer works on never sees the light of day, and if it does. It usually is not at all like anything that you originally wrote. Mm. So when something does come to fruition that you recognize, it's pretty trippy, man. It's pretty trippy. There's an attraction that I wrote like 6 years ago for Thinkwell at Ferrari World called Benno's Great Adventure. And you look at it on YouTube and it's kind of sorta what I wrote. There are some things that did survive, but you can tell definitely that people have had their own spin on it along the way. But yeah, so when it does happen, it's cool. There are things that are in the works right now that I've worked on that it looks like they're going to happen. And what's nice is by the time they do happen, you can look at it and if it's great, that goes right on your resume. And then I'm right back on the podcast talking about how cool that was. Right. And if it sucks, I never touched it. Right. So it's one of those really cool things where you know, writers are more stealthy than like artists who, you know, they have their artwork online, you know, they can just show people their portfolios, whereas writers, not so much. So we're kind of, writers are like weird conundrums in this business. But it's exciting, and I can't draw stick people to save my life. So it's a damn good thing I can write.
That's awesome. Well, as soon as one of those things hits that people like, we'll have you come back on and say, hey, that was me. Awesome. So you have you took your first trip to Shanghai Disneyland days ago, right?
I mean, did.
Yeah, just days ago.
I can still smell the cigarette smoke on my jacket, and I'm not kidding.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Right? So anybody that's been to China, it is like walking into a fog bank of cigarette smoke, because everybody smokes in China. That's just the culture.
Really?
You take a cab, and it's like you're, you know, yeah, it's like you're in this like aquarium filled with smoke if you're in a cab, you know, in China. And you just come home and your clothes just reek of smoke. So, yeah, it's so fresh. I can still smell the smoke.
Literally. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paris is along the same lines as well, which is interesting because you wouldn't think that Disney would want to put parks in areas which are so heavily with smoking.
Yeah. Well, they want to put them in areas where they're densely populated. And
that's true.
China has a few people.
One or two.
Yep.
Yeah. So you were there on business. We don't need to get into your business. You know, we don't want to put you on blast.
On my business.
Your business.
It was, you know what? It was only my second time. So in the past month or so, I've gone to China twice, and that's the first time I've ever in 48 years been out of the United States. Wow. Which is a because like most people in my profession, oh yeah, I went to Abu Dhabi last week, and then I'm going to Paris, and oh, we have a meeting in London. You know, no one ever takes the writer anywhere, because why would you want the writer to know anything firsthand? yeah, right. So writers rarely get taken any place. So I've been working for a company called Idea Attack in Pasadena, and we have been going back and forth to Beijing for a series of meetings with a Chinese client. And you know, the second time I went, it was a matter of, well, you know, they're willing to let me stay if I want to like sightsee and that type of thing. They just need to know when I want to fly back. And I just thought to myself, you know, the next trip or a third trip or whatever is not ever guaranteed in any project. So I would be remiss if I was this close and didn't go to Shanghai Disneyland. And so what I did was a little hairy for somebody that's only been to China twice. Yeah. in a matter of weeks apart. I booked my own flight from Beijing to Shanghai. It's about about 820 miles to the south, so, you know, 2-hour flight. So I booked this, you know, flight and flew into Pudong International Airport and booked myself a hotel smack in the middle of Shanghai, because I wanted to see Shanghai as well. And just went for it by myself, man. And so it was like training wheels are off. There you go.
Wow.
And yeah, it was like a modern day Indiana Jones adventure. It was pretty it was pretty cool. I did it. I landed and it was cool. The cab picked me up and took me to my hotel. And on the way to the hotel, I passed a sign on the freeway that was in Mandarin, but it had a Mickey silhouette, you know, Mickey head silhouette on it. And I was like, I recognize that symbol. And, cause you know, Shanghai Disneyland is like Paris also. It's outside of Shanghai. It's not in the middle of Shanghai. It's about a 35-40 minute cab ride outside of Shanghai. So it was cool passing it. And I got a little giddy going, oh, I'm going to be there tomorrow. And then yeah. I went and did the tourist thing. I walked the Bund and I walked Nanjing Road and went and had kind of a Western-ish dinner on the Bund. And then went to bed and got up the next day and went to Shanghai Disneyland all by my lonesome.
Wow. Now, Grant, did you take the subway to Disneyland when you were in Shanghai?
Yeah, we took the train, which was an experience. that was like the most aggressive people I think I've ever met as far as
I didn't want that experience, Grant. At one point, that's why I took a cab.
At one point, my wife actually, you know, almost got trampled and injured, leaving, like trying to do a train change because people just, it's sardines, and if you know, they do not move for anybody, so you have to like push your way through. So, versus coming off of Tokyo, which is much, much more polite, and they have music that plays, that lets you know, hey, everybody's getting on, and then they have a separate song to play to, you know, get you off.
Oh, that's awesome. You know. That's so funny.
But over there, it's like every man.
I would love to have a song that would get me off.
Hell.
I'm just saying. You know. James is like, oh, okay, there goes my iTunes rating. So yeah. Thanks for that. Wow. 5 minutes in, and we're already talking about that. That's fantastic.
Right? Oh, yeah. Off the train, everybody. Off the train. All right. So, I just wanted to compare and contrast the getting to the park experience. So you had a now, why did you decide to stay far away as opposed to one of the? Do they have on-site hotels there?
They do. They have two.
Yeah, why did you choose to not stay at one of the on-sites?
Because I was able. Well, number one, I wanted to see Shanghai. I had the whole afternoon and night to see Shanghai, so I wanted to be in the city proper. Mm-hmm. And number two, just basically, I booked myself a luxury hotel for half the price that Disney wanted for one of their, you know, mediocre rooms. Honestly.
Sounds like a familiar story.
So yeah,
to any Disney resort.
Like, no, I do the entire experience, and so I just, honest to God, stayed right in Shanghai.
Yeah, like for me, I paid $50 a night for a hotel that had no windows, but it was a big room though, and it was the nice thing with that was that, you know, the hotel rooms a night over for Disney were like $300-$400. So
of course, yeah.
Yeah, save the money there, you know. And
yeah, it was crazy. No, I had I stayed at a hotel called the Eaton, I think it was, and I had a room that I was like on the 23rd floor, and I overlooked the river and
oh, nice.
It was cool. It was cool. Shanghai much nicer than Beijing. It's more European, and it just seems more modernized than Beijing. Beijing's a weird mix of communist versus ultra modern. Type architecture style, and it's just so big and crowded. Shanghai was a really cool experience.
Now, how much in Beijing? How much English is there? Because in Shanghai, there's English on most signs.
Probably
and all the trains. Yeah, there were
pretty much next to nothing. Now, I understand that the metro in Beijing does have English, but when I'm in Beijing, I take cabs everywhere. It's so cheap. I just, you know, I take cabs everywhere I'm not adventurous enough yet to try the metro.
Okay.
Oh, so, well, going back to your Disneyland adventure, you showed up, you got there. So what, you got out the cab.
It was crazy. So yeah, what happens is like, so you go to the concierge and you tell them, I want to go to Shanghai Disneyland. And I don't know what it is. It's really weird. Grant, did you get this too? Where it's like, they weren't really sure. It's like, I had to show them a lobby card. You know, I had to show them a brochure of Shanghai Disneyland. I got the impression that a lot of working class people in Shanghai don't really know what Shanghai Disneyland is.
Yeah. I kind of got the why would you want to go there type thing.
Interesting.
And I kind of get that here living in Florida. I live about 3 hours south of Orlando.
Sure.
And I wait tables for a living. And, you know, inevitably I hear tables talking about Disney. And I mentioned to them that I've been to every Disney park in the world. And they say, why would you want to go to those other Disney parks when instead, yeah. Like, you know, just kind of people don't realize that there's differences and such.
Yeah.
That, you know, everybody thinks, well, you already have this here. Why would you want to go somewhere and do that instead of that? So I think it's just like, I think that there's a certain mentality with some people across the world that that maybe Disney is for kids, or, you know, or
God, we got that everywhere. It's in our backyard. We have friends that are like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's,
I learned a long time ago doing TPA, you cannot make people understand. Either they get it or they don't get it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, just I don't even waste my time anyway. If people like don't, well, except most of my friends now are industry type folks, so they get it. But back in the day, like doing TPA, people just didn't understand why I would have a theme park website. Like, and so, it's just one of those things that you either get it or you don't get it.
Yeah, like, we have a wall in our house of all photos of us posing with different characters, and people are like, why would you want to take photos of people wearing suits? And it's like, because that's a fun goal for us, you know? Yeah. Like, you don't get it. You either get it, you're on board, or you're not.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'd imagine anyone listening to this definitely gets it, because I don't know otherwise. Why would you be listening to this?
So anyway, so I take this cab, and I, you know, so the concierge goes out and they call the cab, and then the cab, they tell the cabbie where you're going, and you're like, please don't be messing up my directions, because you can't understand what the hell they're saying.
Yeah.
And then you get the cab, and like, so my cab is like screaming through the streets of Shanghai. I'm like, oh my God, this is how it ends. You know, I don't even get to see Shanghai Disneyland, because I'm going to get just creamed going, you know, going to Disneyland. And so anyway, he takes me, and there's no, so like, if you arrive at Walt Disney World, and I believe also it's the same as Hong Kong, you go through, like, there's an entry statement. You know you're there. You go through the archway. The angels sing. The sun rays come down. There is nothing telling you that you're at Shanghai Disneyland. And the only clue that I had was the minute you get off the freeway, you drive a little bit, and suddenly the landscaping is, like, existent and manicured and nice. And so he dropped me off. Now, we'll talk about this too, Grant. I went right after Lunar New Year. During the week, it was really freaking cold, rainy, threatening rain, and windy, and there was nobody there, which was great, because everybody I've talked to said, oh my God, you're going to wait 3 hours for Pirates and 2 hours for Tron, and blah, 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 blah. And there was the longest wait I had all day was 20 minutes.
Whoa.
Everything else was like, Pirates was a walk-on. They were dispatching empty boats. So I hit it just right. So anybody that's listening, pro tip, go right after Lunar New Year ends during the week, and nobody will be there. It's amazing. It was really cold. The hours were shorter. It was 9 to 8. But I pretty much had ample time to do everything that I wanted to. I think 2 days, we'll get into this. Two days, I think, would maybe be a little too long for me in one trip. Cause there were just like one or two things that I wanted to do that I didn't get to do just because of time. If it had been a longer day, I could have done it. If the park was open till midnight, no problem. But, anyway, so they dropped me off, and when you get out, it was like this weird, it's like where buses come and stop, I guess. But there was like no welcome to Disney. There was nothing. And I was like, are you sure? Like, I'm in the right place. And he's all, da, da, da. You know, I'm like, I have no idea what you just said, dude. I could be 20 miles away. I have no idea. So I got out and I'm looking around, and then I realized I could see just the very top spires of the castle peeking over a building. And then I looked a little bit more to the left, and I could see, oh, you know what? That's the Tron show building. And then I was like, okay, well, at least I know I'm in the right place. I can walk. And so I walked, and again, there was like nobody with me walking. It was the weirdest thing. And I'm like, did he drop me off in the back? I mean, I don't know where he dropped me off. But then I merge, and then I come across this little wayfinding sign. It's like, you know, one of the directional signs, and it's like pointing down the path, and it says Shanghai Disneyland. And I'm like, well, that's impressive. And so I'm walking, and the path suddenly merges with the people that I believe are coming out of the metro station. And so right when that happened, and what was really cool is right when that happened, the Baroque Hoedown came on. And for people that don't know, that is the Main Street Electrical Parade music. And it's something that's very near and dear to me. I grew up with it. One of our biggest, back in the day, one of our biggest issues that we had ever done was the history of the Electrical Parade. And then, of course, I go way back with Don Dorsey, who did the music for the Electrical Parade. So it was like, suddenly all the feels. It was just like, oh my God, holy crap, you're actually here. And it's like the park is welcoming you by playing the Baroque Hoedown. And it was like this magical moment, and I instantly like teared up and like choked up, and like it was amazing. And so you walk, and then you kind of like, you get to like Disney Town, which is their version of downtown Disney. And the first thing you pass is on the left is the World of Disney. And that is just like straight up. It says the World of Disney, and it could be from anywhere. It could be from Florida. It could be from Anaheim. It just looks like they picked up a building and plunked it down right there in the walkway from the United States, right? And so then I knew, obviously, I must be in the right place. And so I showed up, and the first thing – now, Grant, this might have been different for you and me because it seems like this is fairly new. To get to the security gate, there was a massive switchback area set up with barricades. Did they have that when you went?
No. When I went, we went –
it was a free-for-all. Was it free-for-all?
We went in October of the first year they opened. So we were there like 4 months after opening. And what it was giant lines of people to get in with security. And then there would be people selling ponchos out of their, like, backpacks. Like, because you're not actually on Disney. Like, you're on Disney property, but you're, like, people were scalping merchandise as they're waiting to go through security, if you can picture that. And you would see, like,
It's still a thing. I saw somebody selling knockoff Mickey mini ears in line for pirates.
Yeah, and
oh yeah, they totally do. And people were like giving them the yuan, just like they were just handing them cash. Oh yeah,
wow.
Oh, and did you have the? And you see, there would be armed guards that would come over, and by armed guards, I mean that they're holding like full on assault rifles, and they would come up and they would like move these people away. But it was like, it was kind of a free for all. And we did 3 days there because it was so crowded, because it was so new.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And we were like, look, we may only get to this place one time in our life. We want to make sure we feel like we did it. But it was a free for all. It took probably an hour each day to get in.
Yeah. So for me, it took. So I had the switchback, and it was really weird because I'm there, and I got there an hour before. I got there an hour before the park opened, at least. And because everybody's like, oh my God, get there early because you won't believe the security line. So I get there and I'm like, oh, only half of the switchback is full, but it's like the biggest freaking switchback in the world. It was crazy. And there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people already in line for the switchback. And that was the first place ever in my so far trips to China that I have encountered the kind of pushing and cutting in front of you type thing. People were like just coming all around me, and just like, I'm like, dude, you know, we're not going anywhere, right? And but you know, it was one of those things where, because I'm a definite, I like my personal space bubble. So like everybody has already prepped me. Like when they knew I was going to China, all my friends were like, dude, don't kill anybody. Don't cause a national incident because they're going to touch you and they're going to push you. And it didn't happen my first trip. So the second trip, I was like, well, I'm going to Shanghai Disneyland, so it's going to happen. And it started. What people don't understand is it's cultural. They're not being rude. They're not, you know, just, that's just the way the culture is. And I encountered that a couple times throughout the day at Disney. And, it didn't bother me. If I knew it, you know, I knew it was coming, and I was just like, okay, deep breath time. And it was funny. And then I was also, and Grant, maybe you got this too, I was also very keenly aware that of all these hundreds of people, I was the only whitey from America there. And everybody was whispering and looking, and it probably made it 10 times worse that I was by myself. And they were all, I mean, everybody and their mother was whispering and talking, and you could just tell that they were saying, what's that dude doing here? You know, did you get that at all?
A little bit. And, you know, like, I mean, granted, you know, especially over the last year or two, you know, relations are kind of weird with the U.S. and China right now. So, you know, I don't know what their media is feeding them and all that kind of stuff about the United States. So it definitely did feel a little worrisome in some regards. But I did feel like people were talking about us. So
did you guys ever feel unsafe
No, you know, quite the opposite, James. And I'm sure Grant can speak to this too. Even in like Beijing. So I walk a lot when I'm over there to see things and just, you know, just kind of soak it all in. Mm-hmm. Sorry if I turned away from the mic. I'm pouring booze. And so Beijing being a, well, you call it what it is. It's a communist country. If you mug somebody and rob somebody, you know, they're going to put you to death in China. So actually, you know what? It's actually really safe in China. There were several times where I went out to bars or to check things out or whatever. And in Beijing, I would come walking back to the hotel and I found myself walking down these really tiny, just like pitch black alleys. And you're thinking to yourself, dude, if you were even in the U.S., you'd be like, you might as well wear a beacon that says, please mug me.
Right.
Please mug me. Please mug me. And you're walking down. You're like, oh, is this safe? And you hear footsteps coming. And you're like, oh, no, there's somebody coming at me in the darkness. And the footsteps get louder. And suddenly it's this pretty little thing walking by herself in the dark. And you're like, well, dude, they're sure as hell not going to come after me if they didn't come after her. So, no, it's actually really, really safe. I've never felt like I was ever in any kind of precarious situation in China at all. Did you, Grant?
No, and the one time I felt like weird was the first time when we landed to Shanghai. We did Shanghai as the last part. We did Tokyo, then Hong Kong, then Shanghai. Was we were looking for a non-existent Hard Rock Cafe that apparently was being relocated. We were walking through some dark alleys and we would see people vomiting and urinating in the street.
Oh, that means they just had a great time.
That's like
a TPA mixer.
But kind of like shady in some areas. So we were a little, it was a little uneasy, but then like after we kind of realized how people like that was like just normal, acceptable.
That is, that's a thing. That's totally
a
thing.
It was like, oh, there was nothing to worry about. Now, we did feel, I did feel like the best way to kind of like make people a little more easy about like the big, tall Americans, because, you know, I'm 6'2" and 250 pounds. So compared to most Chinese people, I'm giant. I would notice that they'd be like taking selfies and stuff. So I would photobomb and do like stupid faces. And they would just, start thinking that was hysterical, and like they'd be doing their version of Snapchat and sending it to their friends and like, you know, like posing with me and stuff. So like that was kind of like a way to kind of like, even though I don't speak the language, I'm able to show that, hey, I'm being friendly and I'm a nice guy and I'm here to enjoy this just like you are.
Yeah. We're not to drag us too far off subject, but like my first trip, I went to the Forbidden City in Beijing. And as you get there, there's this big board that actually had some English on it telling, you know, saying what the Forbidden City was and all this stuff. And as I'm standing there reading it, I realize there's this group of little kids, like five to seven year olds. And they're like totally standing, just like straight up staring at me. Like they have never seen a white guy in their entire life in person. Right. It's like, what the hell is he doing here? And this little girl was just like locked in. And what do? You smile and you wink, you nod or whatever. Mm-hmm. And just stone face. She just staring at me, just staring, not even blinking, just staring at me. And I love this so much. When they left, mom was like, okay, it's time to go or whatever. They all leave. Little girl, just she reaches out and she just runs her fingers along my arm. Oh. And it was like, so, you know, like for the next 2 weeks, she's like, I touched the white man. It was amazing. It was really, really funny. It was really cute. It was hilarious.
It was like in Happy Valley. I had the Chinese girls that were like looking at me like they had never seen somebody, and we were going through the haunted houses over there, and they were hanging on to me for dear life. And it was And I would also like run ahead in the haunted houses because they were scarcely populated, and hide and then sneak up and scare them.
Oh my god!
Like, and my wife like knew that that's what I was doing because she didn't go into those places and she heard all the really loud screams and she's like, "Yep, that's my husband doing that." All that.
Oh yeah, that's amazing. And they all come out with wet pants. That is just fantastic.
But they would give me like giant hugs at the very end of it, like just kind of like showing you that even though that there's a language barrier,
sure,
we're all in the theme park community and we're all there to have a good time and, you know, enjoy each other.
Yeah, I had a couple of those moments we'll talk about a little bit. But, yeah, totally. But to answer your question, James, no, Never felt unsafe at all.
That's amazing. And I love what you just said there, Grant, too, that, you know, once everyone's in the park, it's like we're all here to have fun and enjoy the theme parks, no matter if we speak the same language or not. So that's...
I found that across the board, too. I found that with guests at Shanghai. And what was really funny, so, again, there was, like, nobody when I went. So everybody can hate on me. there was nobody when I went. And literally, I think there were probably five white people in the park the entire day. And it was really funny because you become acutely aware of that because you keep passing each other throughout the day. And you give each other the kind of like the wink and nod, like, hey, good to see you, you know, type of thing. It was just, it's just like a really, really funny thing. And you don't know whether they're European or American or, you know, whatever. But it's like most of the time, one of these things is not like the other ones. And you feel really, really different when you're in China.
Oh, yeah.
But the people were, for the most part, I ran into people that were just, again, like Grant said, that the language barrier is broken if you laugh and smile with each other. And now, not exactly the most outward people in the world, just culturally. Like when the first time I went to Beijing, I'm walking down the street, I'm winking and nodding and waving and smiling and how are you doing, everybody? And people are looking at me like, the hell's wrong with you, type of thing. Probably kind of like walking in New York. And so I was just like, okay, these people just don't acknowledge each other. But you know what? In the park, it was different. Like at Shanghai, it was different. Like you'd smile at people and they'd smile back. And certainly on rides, everybody, fun-loving people, really fun-loving people, they hoop and holler at everything, whether it's a stunt show or whether it's a little tiny drop in Pirates or one of my well, we'll talk about this later. My favorite experience of the entire day was I sat with this probably 30-something-year-old Chinese guy that had the time of his life on the Dwarf Mine Coaster. It was unbelievable. It was like my favorite part of the entire day. So we can talk about that more later. But, I mean, but yes, the laughter and just being in the park completely breaks down the communication barrier. It really does.
Oh, yeah. Like, if I might just mention a quick little story. But over in the castle, they have a walkthrough of Snow White, of the story of Snow White.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a part where, like, you see her turning into a witch and giving the apple to Snow White. And I started, when that scene happens and plays out, I started applauding wildly and cheering. And the Chinese guys next to me, the older dads, were, like, laughing hysterically because it's like, I was, like, giving the thumbs up, like, yeah, she's going to poison this little girl.
Mm-hmm.
That was so funny because they were like, okay, this guy has a sadistic sense of humor.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, by the way, very, 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 very tiny side note. I wanted to kind of like let everybody know that I don't think anybody, like, this is a new thing that since I went, but my mom utilized it, that they now have a thing like if you only have one day in Shanghai, you can pay like 50, 60 bucks. And get a fast pass guaranteed for all of the attractions.
It's for like four or five of them.
No, my mom got one that was good for 11.
There's a thing called a... I have their website up because I got to remember the names and sound like I know what
it
I'm
was
talking
like
about.
Max Pass or something.
It
like
was
that.
A Max Pass, and it's for the big attractions.
You got her 11 like, of them.
Interesting. So I didn't need that. Go
nobody
ahead.
Was there.
nobody, because no. Did I mention nobody was there?
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
So, but yes, they did have that, and you could pay either for the big one or you could pay like I was prepared to pay separately, like 50 yuan each. You could buy like individually for the different attractions, and I was ready to do that because like 100 yuan right now is like I don't know like 13, 14 bucks. US. So okay. I'm like 50 yuan, that's no problem at all. I'll just pay that and just cut that line, you know. But I didn't have to. So yeah.
Wow.
So that is cool that they have that there. And I did my homework before I went like a good little boy and I was prepared to do that. But I didn't have to. So
yeah, they didn't have that when I went, but so I didn't mention it on the last one where I was talking about that. But just letting you know, if anybody goes out there and you are pressed for time and it's crowded,
yeah,
you do have that ability for the paid fast pass for all the big attractions.
Yeah, and it is. It's the Max Pass. I think you're right. That's definitely what it's called. It's the Max Pass.
I mean, that's what it's at Disneyland too, right?
Is it?
Yeah.
I think that's what it's called. I don't use it, but it's the paid Fast Pass.
Yeah, my mom had 5 hours out there, and she got to do all the attractions there in 5 hours just because.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's really cool. Yep.
All right. So once you got in there.
So I did.
What was the first thing you wanted to do once you were like, I'm in here?
This is going to be like the 5 hour podcast. And so
I know.
You get in there, and what's weird to me, what struck me as weird, because the only parks I've been to are, I mean, I grew up with Disneyland, and I'm 48 now. Since my 25th birthday, I've been going to Florida fairly often, and now we go several times a year to Florida. It really struck me that there was no train station. When you go, they have this faux building that's kind of looks like a train station, but it's not. It's like a cross between a train station and maybe a greenhouse type thing. I don't know. It's just a building, but it's all off skew. It's all off to the left. And then there's the Mickey flower bed, which is also off to the left. And so I immediately went there and got my picture taken. And it was really funny. So I gave my phone to the cast member, and the cast members were really fit. And they not necessarily know a lot of English, but they know what you want when you hand them your phone. And it was really funny, though, because there was a lady, and I think there was an older lady and her daughter, and it sounded like they were like Australia, New Zealand type. And the cast member automatically assumed that we were together because we were white. And so the cast member was trying to get us in the same picture, and I was like, no, one, just one. So the cast member turns my phone vertically just to get me, but the cast member like was so blown away that I was like by myself, and wait a minute, there's white people here. It was really funny. It was great, and it was one of those reminders. It was a very early reminder in the day that, wow, you really are a long, long way from home. And this is not going to be your Disneyland or Walt Disney World experience. And so I did that. And then I went, you know, obviously through the portal into, they don't have a town square. It's Mickey Avenue. They don't have Main Street USA because design wise, they don't understand the Victorian, middle America, old school, you know, Main Street. Mm-hmm. So the designers decided, well, we're just going to create something new. It's more like an upscale Toontown. Is what Mickey Avenue looks like. And it's not as long as Main Street. I would say it's probably half as long as Main Street. The buildings are all probably to scale, like Florida. They're not like ours. They're large. And you would find it's, you know, for lack of a better term, it's like the Emporium and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then it just spits you out into the middle of the park, which is – another thing that really struck me is walking into – town square, not town square, was that there was no flagpole. It was just really weird because where our flagpole would be, it's just a really nice open space where you get a really cool view down Mickey Avenue across the gardens, and they're called Gardens of Imagination, I believe, to the castle. And the castle in itself, oh my God, here comes another 30 minutes. Get ready, James. So the castle is the Enchanted Storybook Castle, and it is the largest Disney castle that's ever been built. And it's like you're in freaking Red Square in Moscow. It looks like it is. It's so big that it almost, to me, the irony is it's so big it almost doesn't feel like a Disney castle. What did you think, Grant?
What I was going to say is, what do you think about how far away the castle is?
Well, yeah, it's like 10 miles.
This episode of Creepy Kingdom has been brought to you by League of Shadows. This is an Etsy shop that specializes in paranormal and creepy-inspired jewelry, including a Haunted Mansion Parasol Girl necklace. Just go to etsy.com/shop/League of Shadows. That's etsy.com/shop/League of Shadows.
So the park is freaking huge. When I was there, so between 9 and 8, I walked 11.4 miles in the park. It's a huge, huge park. The walkways, we're getting right into this. The walkways, for the most part, are massive. So I remember when DCA opened, a lot of the criticism was, well, the walkways are so big. It feels ridiculous because the walkways are, it's ugly because the walkways are so, dude, the walkways at Shanghai Disney, it's like you're walking by yourself on the 405 freeway.
Yeah.
It is, the walkways are so ridiculous that they're like twice the size of the biggest walkway at California Adventure. It's huge. The scale of this park is huge. So what struck me first of all, really, when I was like kind of doing my homework, was the park itself physically is really freaking big. It's no joke. Put on your sneakers. Don't take your fancy shoes. You're not going to impress everybody, and your feet are going to hate you. So take your sneakers, because there's a lot of walking. And for a park that size, I was surprised there aren't that many attractions compared to Disneyland, that has like what? Disneyland has like what, 68 attractions or whatever can do it, right? This literally, I think it's less than 20, right, Grant?
Maybe 14 or 15. I think I said on the podcast that the distance between the turnstile and the castle was like Bay Lake and or the Reflection Lake in Epcot. Like it's
dude,
just
it's
like
huge
from the ball of Epcot to the American Adventure. Like the American Adventure is where the castle is.
That's
like,
crazy. That's, you know, crazy.
It's ridiculous. But wow. It does its job as a visual attractor, because I could not wait to get closer to the castle to take pictures. And I knew like the best selfie in the world is coming, you know? So it was really, really cool. And it was very surreal to see this. Anytime you travel, and I'm learning this late in life, anytime you travel and you see something that you've seen in videos and you've seen on pictures on the internet, it's so surreal to finally see it with your own eyeballs in person.
Oh yeah.
And it's big. So like when you see pictures of Cinderella Castle in Florida, you know it's big. It's bigger than ours here in Anaheim, of course. And you get there and you're like, yeah, this is big. But dude, when you come down Mickey Avenue and go through the gardens towards the castle at Shanghai, it is freaking big. It's so big that it could be like a real castle.
It almost makes the Cinderella Castle over here in Florida look like the castle in Disneyland. That's, mm-hmm. That's the best illusion. I'm a California boy initially, by the way, so
great.
I'm very familiar with all parks.
And girthy. So yeah. It's not just tall. It's like 900 feet tall. And it is just it's girthy, man. It's big enough. But it houses a restaurant. It houses retail. It houses the Once Upon a Time Adventure, the walkthrough that you talked about, which
it has
is great.
A scene for a boat ride in the bottom of there.
And then and then it's the dark ride portion of the voyage to the Crystal Grotto, which is down below. So there's a lot going on in this building. And then of course there's a stage out front that is used for the stage show during the day. And then, of course, they use the facade of the castle for the nighttime spectacular, the projection show. So there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on with the Enchanted Storybook Castle. And I've been posting James, maybe you've seen, I've been posting a ton of pictures, like the last 2 days on our Instagram. It's like this nonstop like feed I have of the castle pictures that I've been posting. And just because it's just so freaking big. I went and walked around it, and you walk through it, and it's huge inside, and you look up, and it's kind of reminiscent of Beauty and the Beast, the ballroom with the chandelier hanging down. And it's just like one big wow after another as you walk around it. Again, the irony is it's so big, it almost doesn't feel to me like a Disney castle, because it's just like a huge freaking thing, right?
When we did the when we actually ate in the castle, we did the dining, character dining,
the royal
and each room in
hall.
The each room in the royal banquet hall was themed to a different princess.
How many rooms were there, Grant?
We got to walk into four, and they said that there were three or four more rooms that were fully decked out that were not available for the public to see. That when they expand, they have that ready to go. Like, it's all decorated and ready.
Oh,
nobody
sure.
Is allowed
okay.
To see,
I get
nobody's
it.
Nobody's allowed to see it yet.
I
and
get
each
it.
Each one's decorated to a different princess. So it's like, that's how big this freaking thing is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
It seems like the castle could be like its own theme park.
Dude, the castle is like its own land. It's like... It's really, really big, and it's very impressive, and it's great because they designed it very carefully. It kind of echoes all of the Disney castles, plus it has a lot of Chinese flourish and design on it. It's beautiful. I think it's really beautiful. There, you know, I have people that follow us, and I have got people, you know, that say, you know, it's so big, it looks like you might as well be visiting the Kremlin, you know, type of thing. But you know what? I think it's really pretty. I think it's a really pretty castle. I think design-wise, it's an anomaly. I mean, and that's not in a bad way. Anomaly sometimes has negative connotations. I think it's just an anomaly because it is just really so freaking big. It's big, and I think it's kind of funny that Hong Kong now, well, we got to have a bigger castle because Shanghai's got a big castle. It's kind of weird. But, I mean, you know, it's – I think for that park, for the scope and scale of that park – I think it's perfect. I think Hong Kong makes a bigger castle. I think it's going to be kind of weird because that park is small, and this one is definitely anything but small. I just, in closing about the castle, I think it fits the scale of Shanghai.
I'll say with Hong Kong though is that I feel like the Hong Kong castle was done on the cheap, and it was very much reminiscent of the California one, and the castle didn't seem to have
them's fighting words, Grant. What the hell? Done on cheap. What?
Huh?
What the hell? No, I'm funning you.
No,
I'm funning. Oh. I'm funning you, man.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna say the Hong Kong castle didn't feel like it had its own identity. So I kind of feel like by getting an upgrade to the castle is going to, as long as they don't copy anybody else, it'll be fine. Because yeah. That you could even do any. I don't remember even walking into the castle. Like, you can't even walk into the Hong Kong castle.
Really?
No.
What the hell? So you can't even walk through it?
No, I don't remember walking through it at all. We did 2 days in Hong Kong Disney, and we exhausted that park. We did everything.
Yeah, of course. It's like a if there's nobody there, it's like a 3-hour park, right?
Yeah, I took video and put it in the Creepy Kingdom of me walking through the line of Mystic Manor, or no, it's the Grizzly. The Big Grizzly Thunder Gulch. Railroad ride.
Grizzly Gulch, yeah.
Yeah, Grizzly Gulch. And I was my wife and I were the only people in line, and we got off the roller coaster and they said, do you want to ride again? And like, you would never hear that at Disneyland.
Yeah.
you want to just sit here and remain on the ride.
Oh, now see, I want that to happen. If I go to Hong Kong, that's, because I will like ride Mystic Manor 80 times, and I'll ride Grizzly Gulch until I vomit in the ride. But that's okay because that's culturally acceptable.
Yes.
And it'll be great.
All right. So as you mentioned, if we go step by step, we will be a 5-hour podcast.
Dude, this is the longest podcast ever. Yeah, it's gonna be great.
But
you've got your two longest winded guests on the show at the same time, James.
What the hell were you thinking, James?
I don't know. I'm just trying to get some.
That's okay,
good
dude. They're drinking. They're drinking and listening along. Half of them are already passed out. It's fine.
All right, they'll wake up. You'll be.
We'll just keep going. Yeah. We'll just keep going.
How so, great, you know, this podcast is going to be my commute to work for the next week. Great.
Yeah, exactly. And I listen to podcasts like when I'm in the shower and on the toilet. So it's going to be like a month for me. It's going to be great. It's going to be perfect for me.
You're like, I feel like I've been living with you guys for the past month.
Oh my God. So let's just jump right to what people really want to hear about. Let's talk about pirates.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's get to it now.
Let's just get to it.
No,
treasure.
No spoilers, though, please. I told Grant that too.
No spoilers. Like,
yeah,
what?
Yeah. No, I don't want to hear about it. I'm making our listeners suffer.
Okay. So there's pirates. Okay. Let's talk about that. Great. Can we talk about the grid, James? Is that okay?
Yeah,
can we talk about the grid? Can we mention that it's a roller coaster?
No.
Let's talk to the jetpacks ride. We're just flying through now. This is great. Let's talk about the dwarf roller coaster.
No, you can give me all the spoilers on that one because we've already experienced that one.
I actually like the dwarf mine coaster better than Florida's. I think it's better than Florida's.
Agreed, except for the ending.
It's not a clone?
No, I don't think it is faster. A clone. Is it, Grant?
No, it's faster. It's a longer track, but the ending is different. The ending over here in Florida, we get the scene with the witch and Snow White.
Yes.
Over in Shanghai, they do not have that. You have woodland critters.
You have woodland critters. You have a tree that's next to you that has all sorts of critters popping out of it. And actually, what's really funny is when – so Johanna and I are really good friends with Garner Holt and the folks at Garner Holt. So we were there visiting them one day. They were working on this piece. So we actually saw this tree like – I don't know. It's like a year, year and a half ago, 2 years ago, maybe longer. They had this big tree that they were sculpting with these creatures coming out of it in their workspace. And they're like, oh, yeah, it's a piece of scenic for Shanghai type thing. So it was really good because I totally forgot about that. And then I'm on the ride. I'm like, oh, I've seen that. I know. I have got a connection. You know, it was great. I thought it was great. But, dude, seriously, we got to talk about pirates. James, dude, it's all over YouTube. You can watch videos.
I haven't watched any videos.
Dude, everybody and their mother has already seen Battle for the Shrunken Treasure. I mean, Sunken Treasure. I'm not drinking.
Say spoiler alert, you're on a boat.
Say Sunken Treasure five times fast. Dude, we've got it. James, we have to talk about this because a lot of people consider this the greatest modern attraction in the world now.
Yes.
I can tell you professionally, when I'm in meetings, Pirates Shanghai is a benchmark attraction that people refer to in meetings. It's like, well, we want it like this, but not like this. And so they talk about the boats. They talk about the boats being like dune buggies. They talk about the immersion tunnels that you're in for the media sections of the attraction. Come on, man. We got to talk about this a little bit.
Okay, we can talk about it a little bit. I didn't say anyone talk about it at all.
So what I found as I took my time walking through the queue because there was nobody in it. Did I mention nobody was there?
Wow, that's so awesome.
It was great.
That's much better than the person we had urinating in the queue.
So, you know what? I didn't see that at all. I was excited. I was going to take a crap in the bushes. I was so excited. Dude, I was like ready to rock and roll in Shanghai, and everybody was well behaved. The only I saw some mystery puddles in the caverns with the ropes course thing at Discovery Cove, the challenge trails. Yeah. There's indoor areas there, and I did find some mystery puddles.
Did you case them to see where they were?
Pretty sure they're a pee. Pretty sure.
Did you case them?
I used a straw. Yeah, no. I'm pretty sure they were piss puddles. But anyway,
wow.
Back to pirates.
Yes.
First and foremost, I want to give props to Luke Mainrand for creating a truly totally next level attraction. And everybody that worked on it, it's not just one person. It's an army of people these days to do these attractions. It was really interesting because for like everything leading up to it, you know, and everybody, it's just hype, you know, for it. So you have pretty high expectations when you go in to this thing. The queue area is, with every attraction there, huge because it's made for a ton of people. My guess is that queue is probably designed to hold 3 hours worth of people in it. And a lot of it's enclosed, which is great because I'm sure during the summer it gets miserable there. But I buzzed like right through things. The first half of the queue is kind of like lightly themed. You know, you're indoors and there's a few things here and there, posters and chalkboards and things like that. But really, as you get closer to the show building, you get some really cool peek-in scenes that are really neat. And there's one thing that I noticed at Shanghai Disney, which is really great, and I think it's kind of indicative of design these days. There's a lot of like really multidimensional peekaboo, like peek through things. So like one of the last scenes in the queue, you're looking down into a section, the end section of the ride, and it's a long way. You're looking like 50 feet through this scene down into the ride. And I thought that was really cool. They had a lot of that going on throughout the park. And design wise, I love that. I love the complexity of mixing queue with attraction and just different views like that. That really works for me. I love that.
That's how the Paris Pirates is like. You get to see as you're going through the line, show scenes as they're crossing over.
Nice. So you know, I equate this for folks here in California. I equate that to like when you're standing in queue at Splash Mountain and you look through and you see Brer Rabbit at the end of Splash Mountain, It's the same type of thing, except kind of on a bigger scale because it's further away. It's a great peekaboo. I love that. And so I got on this attraction and I got on the boats, and the boats themselves. So like in all the parks except Shanghai, the boats are free floating. They're free floating in a flume. They have guide wheels on tracks on either side, and they have ride pumps that push you along through the attraction. And then there's a man-made current that takes you through the attraction. In Shanghai, it's a whole different deal. You are led, your speed is controlled, where you're looking is controlled because it turns a dune buggy. It's great. And I, like an idiot, I rode it 5 times, and like an idiot, I never took a picture when I was standing waiting to get in the boat between the boats as they're cycling. You can look down in the load area and it's like, it looks like 5 or 6 feet of like tires and track, and you can just tell there's something really big under there, like pulling these boats. Did I take a picture? No, because idiot. And but there's a lot, like Indiana Jones, there's a lot of stuff going on, underneath you.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting. I've talked to a lot of people that find that distracting, because once you're floating and then all of a sudden when the boat starts turning abnormally to different scenes, they find that kind of like pulling them out of the moment. To me, it worked. It worked for me. And so when you float past what it's kind of, they have kind of like a blue bayou. It's called Barbosa's Bounty. It's a kind of buffeteria restaurant, but it has a seating area like Blue Bayou. Looks very much like ours. And good food, by the way, not bad at all. And so you go into a cave and it gets a little spooky and gets a little dark. And as that happens, and the whole soundtrack is in Mandarin, so I couldn't understand a thing. So props to Adam Bazark, who was the show writer on that. He said, wasn't the writing amazing? I said, dude, I don't know. I don't understand a freaking thing in Mandarin. So Adam, the script could have sucked, but I trust you that it's genius. He said, no, it's genius. So it's a genius script in Pirates.
Right on.
And but what's really cool is you go into the dark cave and the boat starts speeding up. And to me, I thought, okay, you know what? That really, on an emotional level, really works, because you realize some like really evil coming. It's like, okay, this is, now it's getting spooky, mm-hmm. And so that really, I got chills, just like designer chills, because I'm thinking like at a million miles a minute about everything as I'm going through, and I'm thinking this really is speaking to me, this is cool. And so the ride is a really interesting mix of media and practical. Anybody that knows me knows that I'm not big on media-based attractions. Dude, they're like, and you know what? The general public, pretty much done with media and attractions. Everybody likes, like, Pirates and Haunted Mansion at Disneyland and Walt Disney World, classic because it's all practical. And people really want to return to that. I really believe that. And yes, media is a great tool. Media should never be a crutch. That's my rant. That's my soapbox for right now. But
that's the wait times at Pandora, though, right now, unfortunately. They're very, very long to get on the Pandora rides.
Well, just in general, right? Like forever. Smoke them if you got them there, because they take forever to load those attractions, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So Pirates is a healthy mix. And for those of us, again, I'm reeling it back for people that, it's hard to relate to something that if you've not been. So Forbidden Journey, I think, is a great parallel with Pirate Shanghai. Forbidden Journey has amazing practical sets, and then you're in these media domes. Well, in Pirate Shanghai, you're in these great practical sets, and then you're in these giant immersion tunnels. And for me personally, there's a little too much media in Pirates, just because it takes me out of the moment. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm in a media tunnel now. That said, it worked because it really felt like you're moving. You're going down to the bottom of the ocean, and then the second time it feels like you're coming up from the bottom of the ocean. And it's augmented with things like splashed water and that type of thing. So it works. Yeah. But in the back of my mind, I was like, oh, God, it's so much media, type of thing. That said, it's completely balanced by, there are two of the most amazing practical sets and sequences that I've ever seen. in an attraction. One is James, cover your ears. One is there's a ship graveyard at the bottom of the sea, and you're in there and you're going through the wreckages of all these ships, and you could hear the creaking and groaning of these galleons underwater. And then the next one is when you come up to the surface again, and you're the climax of the attraction is you're between these two pirate ships that are just opening fire and broadsiding each other, and they're full sized galleons. And it is just, it is really it's a holy moment when you, because also the vehicle turns into this. You're in a screen and then suddenly it turns into this practical set where these two life-size ships are like fighting each other. And it's just like, holy crap, this is really, really good stuff, man. And it just goosebumps and the hackles go up. And it's just, for me, it was the full nine yards, man. It was really, really exciting, and I thought, this is beautiful, beautiful design work, man. So bravo, bravo to everybody that worked on that. What a great, great moment, you know?
So you're saying it lived up to the hype?
it did for me. Now, I don't know that it's the greatest attraction in the world. I kind of still think that Spider-Man at Islands is my favorite modern attraction. But Pirates is way up there, you know, as far as modern attractions goes. It has to be. It's really good. And God, just the scenic work alone. And you got to understand this show building. Jesus, the show building, it feels like it's 50, 75 feet tall. And you look up and they have like the water reflecting on the top. So it looks like you're looking up at the surface of the ocean from the bottom.
That's awesome.
It is unbelievable, man. And for the most part, everything's hidden. Like if you go to Radiator Racers, my God, the minute you look up, you see all the lighting rigs and all the catwalks and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But here it was like, it was so well masked for the most part that you just look up and you're like, oh man, just that's it. Suspension of disbelief. I give up. I'm at the bottom of the
earth. Wow.
This is freaking awesome. And, you know, the figures looked really great. You know, they have the Davy Jones character that wheels around from his pipe organ and is talking to you. And it's a big figure, man. That's the first thing that struck my mind was like, we're a good 10, 12 feet away from this thing. And it's huge. It's got to be, that guy has to be the size of maybe Ursula in the mermaid attraction. Wow. It's a really big animatronic figure.
Yeah.
And boy, it works. It works really well. And of course, his tentacles are like heavy, you know, whether they're probably not latex, they're probably, you know, whatever they are, they're heavier. And it's just, but it looks so organic and it looks so damn good. Like everybody in the boat was like waving at him and taking pictures there. And another thing that I loved is the Chinese public there, and Grant, I'm sure you can echo this, they love being entertained, man. Here in America, dude, it's like half the boat is on the freaking phone all the time. Mm-hmm. Every turn, they were all in, man. And everybody at the same time goes, wah! It's everything is wah! You know, they get really excited about things. And boy, of course, everybody put their phones up and was taking pictures and video and everything because it's a very, you know, technically advanced culture there. You know, everybody's got their smartphones going and everything. Mm. But you could tell they were really appreciative. And they were waving at the character like it was a real character. And it was really, really cool to see people. And it wasn't just one time. Like I said, I did it 5 times. And every time, everybody said, wah! And everybody was waving at the character. So it really worked. And it's great. And the soundtrack is great. And, you know, it's not like a weird, like here we have a weird mix. Here we have the Jack Sparrow stuff, the franchise stuff shoehorned into our original attractions, which is kind of weird. I've never really like accepted it. And they're going into it. It's all the Jack Sparrow. It's all the franchise. It's not, you know, there are nods to ours, but it's all the franchise. And you know that going into it. And you know what? It's great. You got the Pirates music from the movies going, and it totally works. So I would say, without a doubt, I think that Pirates is probably the best thing in the park. What do you think, Grant?
My only issue with the Pirates ride is that I felt like it was a little short, being that it's only 7 or 8 minutes long.
Which is funny because today as a designer, I'll tell you, to get anything past 3.5-4 minutes is an uphill battle like you wouldn't believe. So having something, so I thought it was really long. This is a really long ride, because once you pass 3 or 4 minutes, you're talking millions and millions and millions more per minute.
Oh, I know. It's just,
I was blown away by how long it felt.
Based on the Disneyland one, though, which is about...
Well, sure. That's an anomaly, right? 20 minutes.
But, you know, I will say that that was the best ride in the park by far.
Yeah, by far.
I would say that on our entire honeymoon in Asia, that was my third favorite ride, with number two being Mystic Manor and number one being Sinbad's Storybook Voyage.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So... I'm definitely a practical effect guy, so I appreciated this much more than any type of simulator type.
Amazing.
Of
I mean, we could do an entire show talking about pirates. Amazing show sets. Just again, anybody that worked on that, oh my God, kudos to you, because you knocked it out of the ballpark. You knocked it out of the universe. The show sets and pirates were amazing.
I mentioned on my episode on how I was telling James that I love the idea of you enter through, you know, hundreds of years after the pirates over here in the States end with the skeleton dog and the skeleton crew. The skeleton prisoners.
Sure.
And like that's just such a cool start off to the ride. And I talked about that on the last one, but it's like, man, you're making me want to go back to Shanghai right now.
So what's really funny about that is you got to wonder how much percentage of the people that ride pirates in Shanghai even know that that's a nod to ours, right? It's so weird, right?
Yeah, probably nobody, right?
They probably have no idea, right? Like, I would imagine that a lot of your listeners, James, have no idea what Shanghai Pirates is like. Now they're going to, because they're going to go onto YouTube and they're going to look at videos, unlike you, James, and they're going to know what we're talking about.
Because everybody knows the best way to watch a ride is to watch a video. To watch on YouTube.
Oh my God! Well, but if you live on the other side of the planet, that's probably the most practical, right? And there are some really great videos out there. I have to, like Attractions 360. I think that's the one that does the low light. I got to give them props, man. That's a great, great flow through that they have on YouTube. It's the entire ride. And it's really great.
That's the first one that came up when I just Googled the name of the ride.
That's one you want to watch, because they do really great work. Those guys, they're really friendly. They do really great work. And I kind of hate them because their videos are really good. And we do flow throughs too, but they're not like that. They use a mirrorless camera, so they get the low light really, really good in the attractions and haunts that they walk through. And so definitely check that out. I would recommend that one as far as the viewing goes. It's really good.
Well, I just hold out hope that I'll make it to these places one day. So that's – I have watched the Mystic Manor one when it first debuted, because I didn't have hope then. but now I have hope.
All you have to do is start swimming now.
Right.
Just start swimming now. You'll get there.
All right. Just keep
catch
swimming.
Catch the tide and catch the jet stream, and you'll get there, dude.
Catch right on Godzilla's back.
Yes, that too. But no, that goes only to Japan. You still got to swim a ways to get to Shanghai. But you're almost there. If you get to Tokyo, you're good. Right. Then you're almost there.
Almost there. So the other exclusive, or I think there's only one more. I'm not sure. But there's I'm not being a good host here. I forget the name of the ride. The Roaring Rapids ride. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. So they have Roaring Rapids. So the thing that, and Grant, see if you agree with me on this. One thing that overall, like, I came away thinking about, because I obviously it took me days to wrap my head around everything. Shanghai Disneyland feels like a fever dream. Everything is new, but everything is somewhat. It's like kind of you recognize it. Right. So like Roaring Rapids, you go up to it, and of course that's the big whitewater raft experience. And you go up and you're like, oh, this looks really cool. And you know, all the rock work in that Adventure Isle is great. So Adventure Isle and Treasure Cove, that is like right next to each other. That's the right side of the park, and that is by far my favorite area of the park. I spent the first part of my day in like Treasure Cove, and I was like, I need to move on, or I'm not going to see anything else in this park. But Adventure Isle is where Roaring Rapids is, and you go up and you're like, this is really great, this is really exciting, and then you look at it for a few minutes and you go, I've seen that before, because it looks just like Grizzly River Rapids. Even the bridge and they have the geyser thing, and it's like, it, you're like, okay, I've seen that before. I know that. I know what this is. And so I got on this thing, and again, no wait. Did I mention no one was there?
Surprise.
And I got on this thing, and so it is basically, it's basically, you know, then there's kind of signage through the queue, help discover the mystery of Roaring Rapids. You know, like, you know that there's like some sort of mystery that you're trying to solve as explorers or whatever. It's basically Grizzly River Rapids is what it is. The rapids weren't too bad. I mean, I was the only one in the boat that didn't have a poncho, and I thought, I'm either smart or I'm an idiot and I'm going to get soaked, and it's like 20 degrees out. I didn't get wet hardly at all, not much at all. They toned down, you know, the amount of splashing and all that, which was good. And I figured they kind of would, so I was banking on that, and I was good. So here's my thing: river rapid rides are really hard. I've worked on a few of them as design speaking, and they're a pain in the ass because you can't guarantee that every rider is going to get the same experience. You can't guarantee. Unless you physically grab hold of the ride vehicle and turn it, which is very expensive to do at a given point, you can't guarantee that everybody's going to see a show moment like they're supposed to. And so when people that don't know, Roaring Rapids has been plagued with a problem. They have a giant dragon dinosaur type thing that's kind of like the climax of their ride. That's basically the Yeti at Everest. Oh, it really? Doesn't work.
It doesn't work? Doesn't I didn't move. Know that. Wow.
It doesn't work. It never has worked. It's very intermittent. It's very hit and miss. They just park it in like the stationary position. And like the Yeti in Florida, they throw, you know, they have the strobe light on it or whatever. And it's just kind of there. And that's not how it was supposed to work. It was supposed to like put its head right over you and roar. And that's why it's called Roaring Rapids. And so it coming into the scene, here we go. This is it being demonstrated. Coming into the scene, my back was to it.
Oh,
and
no.
I almost missed the big moment because then I realized, oh, God, the people that are across from me are looking at pointing at something. And I had to crane around in my – it's the same exact ride system as Grizzly River Rapids. I had to crane around in my seat and look, and I saw this dragon thing, and it wasn't moving. It was just parked kind of in the shadows above you, and I saw it for like all of 2 seconds, and then that was it. You know, it is what it is. It's, if you love Grizzly River Rapids, hey, it's an awesome ride. If you're going for something that's just like a mind-blowing e-ticket experience, I don't know that that's it.
Okay.
You know, I wish that they would fix that. Like I wish they would fix the Yeti. Although Everest, I think, stands on its own without the Yeti moving at the end. This kind of stands on its own as just being a fun ride. And holy crap, our raft spun so much. It was like nonstop spinning. And everybody was having fun riding it. You know, it was fun seeing people get splashed and blah, blah, blah. I'm not a water ride guy. I hate water rides. I can't even tell you the last time I went on Grizzly. So I was like, oh my God, I got to go on this though. And I, like I said, I barely got wet. So it was all right for me. I'm glad I did it. The rock work is obviously, the rock work there is great. The rock work there is just as good as anything you'd find in Pandora. You know, and Pandora is gorgeous to look at. I would put it right up there with Pandora. The ride itself was fun, but it's not much more at all than you would get from, you know, Grizzly. What do you think, Grant?
Yeah, if I might add, when we went on it, we only did it once over the 3 days, and the creature was not working either on that day. Mm-hmm. And that was a few months into it. Now, I know that they can actually fix it more easily than the Yeti, as he's not built into the rock work. You know, he's not built into the foundation. However, yeah. As you were saying, you know, like when my mom went in October, I saw her recently. I said, well, what do you think about the animatronic figure? And she said, what animatronic figure? She had the same problem you did, where her and her husband, like, I showed them a video of that thing working, and they were like, wait, that wasn't on the ride.
No, yeah, yeah.
Because if you are facing, if you are going down that raft in the wrong way and facing the wrong angle, you cannot see it. And
it's up there in the dark.
That's the big problem with raft rides, is that you can't have everybody see everything. Now, that the raft ride is actually connected to Mystic Manor and to the Tower of Terror in Tokyo.
Oh, the storyline, you mean?
The storyline is, yeah.
Yeah, the storyline.
Go ahead, Grant, go ahead and explain that.
Is it the Explorers Club or the Adventurers Club?
Explorers.
Yeah, the idea is that Explorers Club, like Mystic Manor is the museum, or is the guy's house who leads the expeditions, and what is it? The Tower of Terror over there is their museum.
The high tower thing, right?
And I think this is like their expedition to get more artifacts.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a neat idea that you have a loose storyline going over three different parks. So
that's cool.
Which only the hardcore fans are going to pick up.
Yeah, they have a restaurant near Mystic Manor as well, because they have like the Mystic Point area, which is
which is great. Stuff, but cool. Yeah,
I like the rapid ride. I didn't, but there was a reason why we didn't do it again over the 3 days. We did it one time, and we said that. Also, the waits were really freaking high, and to get a fast pass, it was like a stampede to get there, and all the fast passes were gone if you did not get there within the first 5 minutes into the back of the line.
Yeah, totally. Grant, I had to wait like 5 minutes, dude.
Dude.
I don't know if I told you, but there was nobody there, man.
When is Lunar New Year?
It just ended.
Yeah, it just ended, and it was school day. Like, I was giddy because, like, on the way to Shanghai, like driving through the city, I saw little kids going, like, to school with backpacks on. I was like, neener, neener, I'm going to Disneyland. And it was really funny because, like, leading up to it, I was like 2 weeks out, I was like, I'm looking at the Shanghai Disneyland app, which is just like our apps here. It tells you, like, the ride times. And, like, Tron never got, like, more than 15-minute wait. And I'm like – and my friends are like, that can't be right. That's not right. And I'm like, dude, it's the Disney app. That has to be right, you know? And nobody there. Anyway, James, what else are we going to talk about? We got a whole part – dude – why don't – maybe you should split this into two episodes. You, dude, milk it. You could milk this thing.
All right. Let's milk it.
You can milk it. James Dumbo. Is now milking this. It's going to be a two-part episode with Rick and Grant talking about Shanghai Disneyland. I'm going to pour another drink.
All right.
When you get to the second episode, I'm going to be so trash. They're going to be like, that's great, but what was wrong with Rick? Well, it was 3 hours and he had rum.
Right.
So, you know.
Where'd all the rum gone? Yeah. Well, let's end this one.
End it. So if you guys want to hear about Tron and all the other cool stuff, you got to tune in to next time.
And you better do it. All right.
That's it.
All right.
That was your bump right there. Tune in next time, and we're going to continue talking.
All righty. Told you that was a doozy, and we're only halfway through. So got to tune in the next episode to hear the conclusion of Rick's adventures in Shanghai Disneyland. But in the meantime, if you'd like to contact us here at the program, you can do so by emailing us, creepykingdom@gmail.com. And for show notes, links to all of our social media, our original articles, reviews, videos, the Creepy Kingdom is expanding at a rapid pace. But there's still only one place to get it all. That's creepykingdom.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our mailing list, where you can get all the creepy goodness direct to your inbox without even having to do anything. Isn't that marvelous? Well, until next time,
keep it.
creepy.
I have a girl now. It is midnight. Pleasant dreams.
This episode of Creepy Kingdom has been brought to you by Olivia Frankenstein. Olivia Frankenstein is an Etsy store that specializes in creepy-inspired enamel pins, buttons, t-shirt, patches, posters, bags, and much more, including their original design Spooky Mouse Club, a must-have for every Creepy Kingdom citizen. You can check out that design and much more by going to oliviafrankenstein.patternbyetsy.com. That's oliviafrankenstein.patternbyetsy.com.